As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Snuggle up, boys. We got a show to do. Hour number two of the radio program for this Friday, the 17th of October. Hello. It's primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. I'm Bob McCowan. That is Elliot Friedman at the way down there at the end. Michael Grange to my right, John Shannon to my left. And that was U2. Have you heard the new U2 LP? CD? Whatever it is? My wife's a crazed U2 fan. She just got it, and I've been listening to it the last couple nights. Pretty good.
Did she know she didn't have to pay for it?
No, she doesn't have Apple products.
Okay.
What?
Is she like the one person left in the Western Hemisphere that does not have Apple products?
How do you not have Apple products?
Oh, I have a BlackBerry.
So do I, but I have Apple products too.
Well, I don't know. We weren't on the list, I guess.
When you walk in the store and you put your credit card out, you're not on a list. They just say, thank you very much for your money.
Well, she went and bought the CD.
Okay.
Well, CD.
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, it was a 78, Michael. Remember those, Bobby? 78?
Yeah, I remember 78s. They were from my parents' generation. They weren't from mine. Mm. But you could play a 78 on an old record player if you had any. And I actually did have a few from my mother who gave them to me.
How is your mother?
She's swell. Thank you for
asking.
Say
hello for me, will you?
Well, she's probably watching right now. I think she watches and listens every day.
She's the best.
She's probably sitting there saying, hello, John. So I thought we'd start with something a little different today. What are you peeking at?
I don't like being unprepared, Bob. All evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, all evidence to the contrary is right. So in the first hour of the program on Fridays, I take telephone calls. And then, generally, I disregard anything that's said in the telephone calls and then try and come up with things that you three idiots will actually converse about. So I thought what we'd start with today is the topics that were addressed in the phone calls today and see what you guys make of this. Doesn't have to be long answers. We don't have to dwell on this. We can go through it quickly, but here are some of the things that were discussed today. Brett Laurie, what would you do with him? Would you consider trading Brett Laurie? Understanding that Laurie is a middle infielder or an infielder, and you already need at least one of those, maybe even two of those. So trading him might be counterproductive unless you got another one back. Would you even contemplate that? Also given that Brett Laurie's production, while not bad, has probably fallen below what you'd hoped he'd be when he got here. Elliot, some thoughts?
I would consider it. What's the return? I mean, you consider anything. Mm-hmm. My biggest issue with if you trade Laurie now, you're selling low. And I don't like trading anybody when I'm selling low.
Okay, but if Brett Laurie becomes suddenly blossoms into the player you hoped he'd be, then you probably wouldn't want to trade him.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I believe you consider trading anybody. Make me an offer. I'll see if I want to do it. So the question is, would I consider doing it? Yes.
Grange?
No. Because he's already better than you thought he would be as a defender. He's maybe the top, you know, at the very elite at that position. And you assume that he's not going to always get hurt. And I think he was showing signs offensively.
Why would you assume that?
I mean, to me, Michael, that's the only case.
I don't think it's very typical for guys to consistently miss 60 games a year. He's not got a chronic back injury. He's not got a chronic hamstring injury, not a chronic knee injury, not a chronic arm problem. He pulls muscles. I'm confident in his ability to figure out how to solve that problem.
John?
No, I wouldn't trade him, and I'd announce him as my second baseman. I'd say we look at the record with this club when he plays second base, it's much better than when he plays at third. And I would go with him until further notice at this point.
I'd take half of your answer. I would say I'd rather see Brett Laurie at third base and find a second baseman. But I think the chances of that happening are less than finding a third baseman and moving Laurie to second.
Okay, so you really agree with me then?
Well, and keeping him?
Yes.
Well, in essence, not for the reasons Elliot mentioned, but I think it becomes problematic to trade him because you already need another infielder. Mm-hmm. I think trading him, if you had a second baseman you were comfortable with, if you had a shortstop you were comfortable with, I'd consider moving Laurie.
What if the offer is for something you look at and says,
I need that more?
Yeah.
What if somebody makes you an offer that makes you say,
you know what, that piece is valuable.
Here's the one that I don't think it's ever going to happen, but here's the confusing one. Here's where it gets confusing. Somebody offers you a top five second baseman in exchange for Brett Laurie.
Why would someone do that if you think he's so bad?
I'm not suggesting they will. I'm saying if somebody made that offer, that would be a difficult one to evaluate because it'd fill your second base hole. Wow. But now you have a third base hole. Unless you can fill that either through free agency or some other way, I'm not sure how far ahead you are. There's a real dilemma here. What this points out is you don't have anybody to play second. You have a guy playing third, and I'm presuming John here, he's a third baseman for the moment, for the purpose of the conversation. That is maybe have that injury-prone thing, and you have a shortstop who looks like he's past his due date, at least at that position. And you're thinking about, is there someplace else we can put Jose Reyes where he's less of a liability defensively, but can still provide us with, 500 or 550 at-bats at the top of the lineup, where I think he's still proving to be pretty effective.
And you wouldn't want to put him at third base?
I'd consider it.
Okay. Then
you need a shortstop.
I don't think that this conversation really occurs if Brett Laurie plays 144 games last year. Because I think that's the only question at hand is his health.
And
can
keep in
he
mind,
stay healthy?
He was very healthy until he took a fastball off his pinky.
It's a fluke.
That's my point.
Wait a second. Two years ago, he was out at the beginning of the year and missed basically the entire WBC because he got injured.
Right. And then he came back and then he... He rolled over his ankle sliding into second base. So
that was when the team needed to have.
You know what I mean? And then this year he's playing. I think he's making evident progress defensively.
Great player defensively.
Yeah, nobody's going to pick apart that game. And he gets dinged on the pinky. Then he comes back, probably rushed back a little bit, pulls his muscle again. So this idea of injury prone drives me crazy.
Well, you can explain it all away. The guy broke his leg, then he broke his arm, then he broke his face, then he broke his hip, then he broke his knee. If he doesn't play and you have multiple injuries, you're going to get that tag. You've got to be concerned whether the guy can be healthy. He also plays baseball like a football player. And whether that is any of his injuries have been reflected in how he plays, I can't say for sure.
I mean,
certainly getting hit in the hand had nothing to do with it. But in any event, no consensus on that one. Second team in Toronto. If Toronto got a second NHL team, two things. Could you charge the same amount as what they charge at the Air Canada Center?
Hey, and stop your panelists from tweeting during the show.
Sorry.
And is there any guarantee that the second team would be successful? Do you have any question that the second team in Toronto would? Yes.
Well,
we're not talking about on-ice performance. We can't quantify that.
There are public documents that the National Hockey League already admits that any second team in Southern Ontario would be the fifth best revenue generator in the NHL. That was in the Jim Balsillie court case in Glendale. If he had been able to move the team to Hamilton, they would have been number five in revenue. It's going to be successful when it gets here. The two things when you talk about ticket prices, if I'm MLSE, I'm saying, you know what, we're not going to win this war, but we're going to create some leverage. Do me a favor, Gary. Tell them they have to charge the same ticket prices that we do in order to control the marketplace. But at the same time, if I'm that...
Does that exist anywhere else in sport?
What, monopoly like that?
No. Did anybody tell the Mets they have to charge what the Yankees do?
That's a good question. I don't
Has anybody told the Angels they have to charge what...
I don't know.
I think the answer is no. I think they're all independent.
Yeah, so do I. But secondly, knowing this market, why wouldn't you try to sell the tickets at the same price?
Yeah, you're going to charge as much as you possibly think you can. I've looked at this two different ways. I've had people who would be in position to know say that the only realistic place for a second team would be sharing the building, sharing the ACC.
We've had this talk for.
I think that's what the league would like.
Sure, and I think in that case, you know, the short answer is yes, successful. I would think there'd be a very interesting business model to make a true suburban team, and then
a 905 team,
and just like acres of parking lots, and you make money. Well, you know, that's a big source of revenue. Your stadium is obviously a lot cheaper. You're appealing to a completely different demographic, and I think in that case you'd probably wouldn't charge the same, obviously. And that would be part of your identity. It would be like a Giants Jets type thing, or a Yankees Mets. One is sort of like more of a blue blood traditional.
Angels Dodgers would probably be
Angels Dodgers. You know, another is appealing to a different type of fan, of which there are many in Toronto.
Elliot,
I don't have any doubt the team would be successful, and I'm sure they would charge us through the nose just like the Maple Leafs do, because they can.
Jake Gardner's future with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is there reason to be concerned about where Jake Gardner is going, or is it way too early to assess that something is wrong here?
I don't think it's too early. I think you've signed a guy for a 5-year, $20 million contract. Last May or April, when at the end of the year, his head coach, who seemed to be the one heading out of town, threw him completely under the bus. Then they go and sign him. So at that point, it looks like Randy Carlyle's not coming back. He comes back. So I think there is a legitimate tension there. And you've got the emergence of another young defenseman who can fulfill a lot of the same role in Stuart Piercy, very early days, obviously. So you just kind of wonder if there's a market out there for a young defenseman with upside under a fairly team-friendly contract. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does get packaged for this team to fill other holes.
Elliot Friedman.
It's weird. Like this, I honestly don't know what to make of the whole situation, in the sense that, as Michael's right, it's a great contract. I don't think it makes him any less tradable. As a matter of fact, it might make him more tradable because you've got certainty there. But if I was the Maple Leafs and I'm trying to take a long-term view of things and God only knows what Randy Carlyle's future is, I'm kind of asking, do I want this coach making the determination on this player's future?
Well, God and Brendan Shanahan.
Okay, the two of them, one and one A. Like, would I trade Jake Gardner if it got me a long-term piece that could make a difference? Yeah, I would. But defensemen are hard to find. Like, you look at the good teams now, they go 4 and 5 guys deep who can move the puck. I know there's things that drive the Leafs crazy about the way he moves the puck, but he's a young guy who's still learning. Mm-hmm. And when I have a bad feeling for the Toronto Maple Leafs, if they trade Jake Gardner, as good as Morgan Rielly looks like he's going to be, and as good as Stuart Piercy looks like he's going to be, at one point they're going to be looking and saying, you know what we could use? A guy who can move the puck like Jake Gardner.
I just don't see them moving him. I just think that management feels there's too much upside, even with, you know, the problems that he creates for the coach and in his own defensive zone. I just don't see it. I think that he's, if you sit down and say, give me the blueprint for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the next 5 years, Jake Gardner's part of the blueprint. And the other thing, I think too much has been made about the benching. I think too much has been made.
Welcome to Toronto.
No, exactly. No, but I mean, here's it. Like, would you prefer to have the team playing the game the way they played in the first two games and lose with him in the lineup, or take him out of the lineup and remedy the situation and try to figure out how to get him back and win the two games.
Sure, but him being in or out of the lineup had no impact on them winning or losing those games. I mean, there was a long list of factors before you'd get to Jake Gardner, in my opinion. And I just find it weird that an organization makes a serious commitment to a player. And, you know, Stefan Robidas? Like, Stefan Robidas seems like a prince of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Played 34 games last year, I think.
Been hurt. He got two major
broken,
injuries.
Broke his leg twice. Yeah. Didn't have a training camp. Played one exhibition game and has been awful. And basically, I mean, after the Avalanche game, I talked to him in the dressing room. He was effectively begging to be taken out of the lineup. Yeah. And in retrospect, he has been taken out of the lineup. And in retrospect, you're like, why would they have rushed him into the lineup when you have Jake Gardner? When you have... So I just think that there is something fundamentally strange.
Actually,
not irreparable. I just think it's strange.
I actually agreed with the benching. I didn't have a problem with it at all. Like, you've made a commitment to Jake Gardner. I think it gives you extra incentive to do that in some ways. Because, you know, you said to Jake Gardner, you know what, Jake, we believe in you. You know how much we believe? We're going to give you 20 million reasons to understand why we believe in you. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have tough love. That doesn't mean you can't sit a guy for a while. I had no problem with the sitting. What I, you know.
And you couldn't do it. You couldn't put him back in the lineup after winning. Well,
I was surprised, kind of surprised that they put him back in tonight because they won two in a row. But I don't think you can leave a young defenseman out of the lineup too long. You're shooting yourself.
To Michael's point, I think there's a mitigating circumstance in this. And I think that Stefan Robidas is feeling.
And you got
not having a camp.
And they're playing back to back.
And they're playing back to back.
It's smart. Like, but I have no problem with the benching of Gardner on merit. I don't like sitting out a guy a long time. Ottawa's done that with their defensemen, and it's done them no good whatsoever. I just, for the long term future of this player, I just, there's so many conflicting pieces in the organization. Who you think has a long term future, who you don't think has a long term future. I really hope that the people who have a long-term view of this organization are the ones making the decision.
One of the callers suggested or asked why Jake Gardner isn't being given an opportunity to play up front.
Up front? Why would you do that?
He's got offensive skills.
Well, you know what? Hey, listen, I just came back from Edmonton and the 30th anniversary of the Oilers' first Stanley Cup victory, and all what we were reminded time and time again through the whole weekend was that how many times did Oiler fans want Paul Coffey to play forward? How many times? I'm not suggesting Jake Gardner and Paul Coffey are the same player. What I am suggesting is the offensive side of the game is the offensive side of the game, and let the defender be that much more potent from the blue line. I just think it's silly. He's a defenseman. Make him, let him learn that.
Of the caller, though, John, what I will say is, and perhaps I should have prefaced my question by this, if he's not going to play on the blue line, is it possible he is a better offensive weapon than one of the 12 guys that are playing up front?
Would you have Erik Karlsson play forward?
No, but Erik Karlsson's a defenseman who's going to play every day.
Well, you know, Erik Karlsson, like...
We're talking about Jake Gardner.
Now, but for 2 years, people were saying the exact same thing.
I would rather have Jake Gardner learn his craft. I think the two games out, sitting upstairs, talking to people, what you should be doing, where you should be on the ice, and just that whole learning curve will hopefully help a guy like Jake Gardner. Don't reward him and just think you got talent, so now you can play forward.
Yeah.
That doesn't make much sense to me.
The Kansas City Royals. Should we have seen this coming, or is this a fluke, a blip on the radar, a decent team who has just gotten hot at the right time? Shannon, I'll give it to you first this time.
Well, that's a...
By the way, I feel like I'm watching the McLaughlin group today.
Yeah. Agree or disagree? In listening to a lot of people in the last 3 weeks, people keep hammering that Kansas City has played this type of baseball all season long and just didn't get noticed for it. So perhaps we shouldn't be too surprised. That said, the stars have aligned. I mean, how many guys are in that mode right now? How many guys are just hitting the ball where they didn't think they'd hit the ball. How many they have a great bullpen. They have their starters, Shields and the starters are pretty good. But at the same time, everybody's just doing everything perfectly, and that's the magic of this time of year. Is it a fluke? It's not a fluke, but you know what? It's a pretty good coincidence.
They are the tainted love of this generation. Great run, one-hit wonder. James Shields ain't coming back. It's going to be awfully tough to replace that.
Pretty good team with, you know, maybe the best back end of a bullpen in baseball history. And that's, you know, and to John's point, they're hitting well at the moment, or well enough.
Yeah, I mean, all those things are true, except they won 89 games, which is pretty good, but it's not overwhelming.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's clearly a difference
between... They were down 8-2 in a single game elimination.
Well, 7-3, I think, wasn't it?
Close enough.
They were down a lot.
Yeah.
Come on.
They were down significantly.
Big, late.
It's a great run, but it's not going to last.
Which is to say they won't win the World Series?
No, I think they could, yeah. But they won't. Yeah, I could see them.
I mean, they are a young team. Yeah. I'd give them that, right?
But like the owner has no history of keeping guys together, and those teams are tough.
The owner just likes making money.
Yes, he's happy to knock all the mom-and-pop stars out of business in your neighborhood, but he's got no history of paying players. Big money.
A topic came up today that we have discussed, actually, this week on this program. How bad are the Edmonton Oilers, and is it time to make some moves? Is it time to give up on to move at least one or probably two of those high-drafted young players? Because as a collective, in the current environment, it's hard to see success being around the corner, and success is something that you would, or at least progress, tangible progress, is something I would have expected long before now, and we're not really seeing it. Is it time to make a move? Grange.
Hold the course. The last thing you want to do is start throwing bodies overboard and be good enough to draft 7th this year. If you got to take your lumps, they've been dragged through the mud so long. If the fates would have it that you're going to be in the top 3 of the draft this year, don't mess with it.
They've been in the top 3 in the draft repeatedly.
And exactly. But this draft is not like those drafts.
This draft's deep at 18. This draft is a deep, deep draft.
Yeah, but it's really deep at the top 3.
Bob, I think this is a question for December the 1st. I don't think it's a question for now.
Well, sure, it's a question for now.
Oh, yeah.
What?
No, I think this is a question for now.
It's a game, Shannon. You can't cop out in a game. Answer the question.
Well, so the answer's no.
All right.
Deferring.
I mean, what?
No. The answer is it's too early.
It's the second half of an NFL kickoff, and John Shannon is deferring.
It's like having the first overall pick at the draft and calling time.
It's not too early. Last year was not too early.
We're
not
sure. This is too controversial this year. I can't touch until December 1st.
No, my answer is not now, but December 1st. That's my answer.
Yeah, but that's not the question. I'm helping.
What is the question?
But I thought there would be development last year, and there wasn't really.
What'd you base that on? Honestly, I'm serious. What did you base that on?
Organic growth. The fact that these are young
Scrivens
guys.
Scrivens and Fast look like they might be competent goalies.
Not so much that.
I honestly didn't have them making the playoffs this year. I had them 12th in the West.
Well, okay, I think
they'll be 12th in the West.
Sure, John, I think would have finished 12th in the West, I think the feeling was they would be closer to.
Here's the question, John. Is Bob's wondering, and people are wondering if their trajectory is 12th, should they do something to alter their internal chemistry to finish ahead of 12th? And my point is, no.
The biggest
issue.
We're 4 games in. Okay, we're 4 games.
They've allowed 23 goals.
The biggest, if they had shown half an effort in Los Angeles, I don't think we would be having this much of a conversation. They played a pretty good game against Vancouver last Saturday.
Scrivens was terrible, yeah.
And then the game in Arizona was not good, but the game in Los Angeles was a travesty. It was a travesty. 6-0. It was 3-0 before people were in their seats.
They didn't have an NHL lineup in that game, and you know,
but their compete level.
Yeah, except for Taylor Hall.
Their compete level, except for Hall.
Hall.
17 players didn't have compete level to be in the NHL, and you can have AHLers in your lineup, but you better be bloody trying. Yeah. And that was something that every Oiler fan said. Well, what, are you going to show up? Are you going to try to hit something? I mean, the Los Angeles Kings are good, but they're not Superman.
I think your question and Mike's answer are interesting, because if the Edmonton Oilers do finish in the top with a top three pick, they'll keep the pick, but I think you're going to have to move one of those guys to get more players.
But they're
getting to the point, Bob, where you know it's tough to get guys to go to Edmonton. Look at the contracts they have to give out to get guys to go there.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah,
that's true.
It is true. And I think they're going to get to the point where we have to say, okay, who's the core player we're going to move to need to get the younger bodies?
Maybe two.
Yeah,
maybe two guys.
Yeah. I think you're getting there.
But if you have a chance to get Eichel, McDavid.
Yeah, but then, you know, but I'm saying that you've got to get guys to play with them. You can't just add more young guys to that mix.
And when you're talking about, now maybe McDavid, you know, comes into the league a year from now and is spectacular, but how many guys as 18-year-olds come in and really make a difference?
Not many.
So all of a sudden, even if you're taking,
you're still going to wait two or three or four years.
I just think they're feeling the weight of their recent failure, and they've got to resist that weight.
I think if you're Connor McDavid, the last team you want to go to is Edmonton, and I say that with due respect. It has nothing to do with the city. It has to do with the environment. He's playing in Erie. So it hasn't got anything to do with Edmonton. It has to do with the environment. If, you know, Connor McDavid goes to a team that has more veterans, more experience, maybe less pressure to win right away, and to be the guy immediately, I don't think there's any place he could go where there'd be a greater spotlight than to go to Edmonton, and he's going to be surrounded by a bunch of guys who are only 2, 3, 4, 5 years older than him.
That's a way... You know, what's a better situation, Edmonton or Buffalo?
Well, you know, Bob, that's what I was going to say, Bob. If you look at the teams that are looking to be at the bottom of the NHL this year, I mean, first of all, I don't know if we've seen a year in recent memory with as many teams that look like they're going to be out of the race as early as this year is. Mm-hmm. Some of them by design and some of them by fluke. But also, like, you look at Buffalo, they went out and got a couple of older guys this year, but they're really young. And you look at Calgary, they're really young. Florida, they're pretty young. And Carolina, depending on what they decide to do, they also could be really young. Like,
it's going to be a battle for that spot.
There's no question. It's a legitimate. And also, but you're looking at a lot of teams that, depending on what they decide to do in the future, they're all going to be young. Like, there's not a lot of veteran teams here that are going to be that bad.
That's fairly standard, I'm sure.
No, but my point is that you're saying that you don't want to go to Edmonton because they're all young. All these teams are young.
I guess the bigger question for me, for Edmonton, is the assets they have, are they that good? That's, to me, the bigger question.
Well, for all we know, they've dangled the assets and found that they aren't as attractive as they thought they would be.
No, I don't think they've dangled a lot of those guys.
I think there's conversations that take place, regardless of whether you're planning on trading people or not. And maybe what they're hearing is, gee, we can't get as much as we thought we could for these guys. You know, grass is tend to be greener on the other side. Do we have a breaking news bulletin? Here?
Shannon's.
Yes, no?
A trade in the National Football League.
Oh, I'm not that interested in this. The Jets with a deal. The Jets have agreed with Seattle to a trade, sending wide receiver Percy Harvin to New York for a conditional pick.
Why would the Seahawks do that?
They're panicking. They've lost two games. They're full on panic.
Like, you wonder this in a vacuum. Like, I know Harvin, he's like the Brett Laurie, he's always hurt. But, you know, Harvin gets hurt a lot, but in a couple of those games earlier this year, I mean, he was brilliant in that offense.
In the playoffs.
See, we talked about trading Laurie, and Seattle traded Harvin. It's kismet. Huh? One more. Carlisle v. Babcock. It starts with this premise that Mike Babcock might not be back with Detroit. And I think it's important to phrase it that way. Does anybody feel comfortable that Babcock is definitely gone at the end of this year?
I do.
You think he's gone?
Yeah.
Do you, John?
Maybe before that.
Before the end of the year?
I certainly think it's highly probable. I mean, I would give it a higher probability that he's leaving rather than staying.
Elliot?
First of all, we also should credit Nick Kypreos for getting the story today that, you know, Toronto had asked about Mike Babcock's availability in the summer before they re-signed Randy Carlyle. Good job, Nick, on getting that story. It's a good story. I believe he's going, but, you know, stranger things have happened. I don't think he'll be gone before the end of the year.
But you think he's gone? Okay.
I think I'm leaning that way, yeah.
Is there reason to believe that his preferred destination is the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yes.
Based on?
It's the tallest mountain. With the biggest pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, at the top of the mountain.
Also the easiest one to fall off of.
Which is the reason Brian Burke came here. The exact same reason. And Bob, you and I talked about this, 2 weeks ago. There's two reasons why Mike Babcock wants to move on, and that's money and power. And when you look at the way the scenario is in Toronto, they have boatloads of money. And when you look at how the organization is set up, there's a great possibility that Mike Babcock could get the power he needs to be the general manager here, as well as the head coach.
So then it would be Carlisle and Nonis departing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you say that with some...
Yeah. I mean,
certainty.
Because Brendan Shanahan is coming here to quote unquote change the culture, and I don't think he's finished. I mean, I'm not even sure he started. I'm not even sure he started.
Exactly.
And it all goes to timing. It all goes to, do you have to tread water and wait in situations? They obviously inquired, as Nick reported, into Babcock, and they said, no, we got to wait a year.
I mean, the one reason I think he could be gone sooner than that, and it's not based on any inside knowledge, but other than it's been reported that he was offered something in the neighborhood of 4 years and $10 million that would put him on par, if not the highest paid coach in the league, on par with Joel Quenneville and Randy Carlyle.
Yep.
So he's been offered that. He declined it. And now you're in a situation where the free agent status of your coach is going to be an ongoing story all year. And
you know what? He handled it beautifully today. Like, it was really funny how he handled it today.
Sure.
Nobody's enjoying it more than Mike Babcock right now. He's enjoying it.
He was such a funny scrum. Like, he answers a question. He has a way of doing it. He goes, okay, guys, we all done here. And, you know, Ken Campbell's like, oh, no, you're not getting off that easy. And you start asking him, how are you doing? What's going on? Oh, everything's good. My wife's good. My kids are good. I love my kids. They're happy.
They always bring his wife up at times.
The idea that this is a distraction, I don't think it's a distraction.
Well, I don't think it's a distraction to him or maybe the team. But if I'm Mike Gillich or Jimmy Devolano or people or Ken Holland, and you know you've gone out of your way to try and take care of the guy, and he said no, I'm like, well, okay, we've got the guy in the wings, their AHL coach.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that during the season.
Why not?
Why would you?
Just to show that you're in control of the situation.
Ilitch, he doesn't strike me. Like, the Red Wings, the reason they're so successful is they're practical.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that's not a practical move.
That's very well said.
The practical move is he's a great coach. He gives you a chance to win. Take your shot with them this year. Mm-hmm. Let the chips fall where they may.
And at a certain point, and as much as Ken Holland is the agent of the transaction, Mike and Marian Ilitch will make a decision whether they're prepared to pay what Mike Babcock wants. And then it goes to the second thing. Will he get the power that he wants? And we know he won't in Detroit. He will never be the general manager as long as Ken Holland is there.
And he's there for four more years.
And you know what, Bob? I think the one last thing I would say about Babcock is, I know Toronto is the lead horse right now if he leaves. It's a long time between now and what happens if some other team craps out of the playoffs?
Sure.
And says, we want Mike Babcock. And what if they're a better team on paper than Toronto is? I'm just curious to see where it all ends up at the end of the year. Who is seriously in the market?
There's potentially another factor here, and it may be a stretch. But I am aware that the Ilitch family has put their business interests up for sale. That includes the Detroit Red Wings, the Detroit Tigers, and Little Caesars Pizza, which, at last look, was the number one restaurant chain or number one pizza chain in America. It's a big, big enterprise, but they are making retirement plans and have decided that they will pursue the possibility of exiting from their business interests. Can't say how long it would take for somebody to express an interest or conclude a deal, but depending on how close Babcock is to the Ilitches, maybe that plays a role into this somehow. Just speculating,
yeah.
But it is a part of the discussion.
Don't forget, they are also building a new arena in Detroit as part of the downtown legacy the Ilitches are going to create behind the Fox Theater. And I do think that they're always thinking about revenue in the new arena, and they better make sure they have a hockey team that can generate revenue, and is Mike Babcock, the coach, can give them the best opportunity to win.
So that took a good portion of the first hour of the program.
Because the bullets are back. That was the bullets backwards.
Bullets at the back, backwards. Yeah. We may have bullets at the end, too.
Wow.
We'll take the break. Come back with more. The roundtable continues on primetime. You're listening on the Sportsnet radio, a network, watching on Sportsnet television.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And we're back, 16 minutes before the hour. Bob McCowan with Elliot Friedman, Michael Grange, and John Shannon for this roundtable. Well, we actually covered topic number one in our little barrage of stuff, so other things to discuss. Oh, the Florida Panthers. They're not very good on the ice, but they've only played like three games or something, so. Do you have expectations the Florida Panthers will be a significantly better team this year, Elliot?
I don't know. I wouldn't say significantly better, no. Okay. I think they were hoping to be improved, but...
They have a goaler.
I think that goaler. They were hoping he'd steal them some games. But realistically, I think they know they've got some time.
Think they're better?
No, not yet. I mean, they're still very young.
A lot of good young players.
When you look at Huberdeau and Barkov and Ekblad, they're young. They're a young team, young. Other than, you know, Brian Campbell and Luongo.
David Boland.
Is there reason to believe that franchise has up the prospect of stability in that market?
If you ask Doug McLean, he will tell you, and I know because I heard it 74 times this week.
While he was there, they were sold out.
Yes,
that's your new broadcast partner.
My new broadcast partner pointed out that when he was in Florida, every ticket was sold.
By the way, a 14,000 seat arena in the city of Miami.
In an ugly area, like a really bad area.
But what I'm saying is there was a much greater population, a lot closer to an arena than being in Broward County.
Do not confuse Doug with facts.
Oh.
Or humility. So what is the future of the Florida Panthers? This is a team that said they drew 7,000. It was certainly less than three the other night. It is midweek. They have trouble with midweek games. They have trouble with games before the football season is over in South Florida. They're not in the middle
Ottawa's just not a big draw.
Ottawa isn't
Florida.
A big draw. There's a whole kinds of bunch of things that...
Hold on, though. They were put in the same division as Ottawa because all the Canadians in Florida would go to the games.
Well, but they don't go in October.
They don't go in October.
So, well, then,
it was Thanksgiving Monday. You got to be back that night.
I mean, if you're watching on television, you got a chance to see some of the empty seats. It was really quite shocking.
It's jarring. Even though they said they expected it, it's still jarring.
It is. The owner, it should also be pointed out, I am told, has ceased with the plan of papering the house with complimentary tickets.
That is true.
And it does take time for that to turn, but sometimes it doesn't. Paul Beeson did it when he came back.
Mm-hmm.
The previous regime under Paul Godfrey had plenty of discount and, I don't know how many free, but a lot of discount tickets. Beeson said no more of that.
Lou Lamoriello, during the time he ran the New Jersey Nets, because with the Devils, he does not believe in freebies. One of the reasons he had issues running the Nets was he stopped doing freebies there, and it caused a lot of inter-office politics between him and the organization.
There was no one at the games.
And the attendance was way down, but he believed very strongly you do not give away freebies.
Yeah, and we're saying this only to not mitigate necessarily, but explain why things might not be good now and might not be good for a while in Florida. And it is a new owner, and he does seem to have deep pockets, and I don't doubt he has a level of commitment, but at the same time, my God, is South Florida the best market you can be in?
Well, hold on. They've been in the playoffs once in 18 years. Once.
So have the Toronto Maple Leafs, give or take.
Well, that's not true. I mean,
that's a comparable situation.
Do you think if they've been in the playoff nine times
in
18 years?
Well, if you're going to raise that one, I could throw that right back at you.
No. I think...
What's the relevance of that?
I think that we all remember the Edmonton Oilers and the issues they had in the 90s when they went 5 or 6 or 7 years. Vancouver, long periods of time, they were drawing 7,000. Rexall at the place when it was called Northlands Coliseum, they were drawing 11,000, 10,000. This is, if you don't win, I don't want to watch it as a fan. And I mean, so I know it's hard to do, but you do have to wait, and you have to wait for Talon and his group to rebuild this organization on the ice in a period of time with this new owner and then make a decision. I don't think you do it now.
I just wondered, if you look at the ownership in Phoenix and, you know, you're getting this new breed of owner, these kind of hedge fund type guys who they're always playing an angle, you know what I mean? And so I kind of interpret either these guys just have so much money, this is their ultimate fantasy team. And this
I think some guys are like that.
Sure. Buying an NHL team in Florida is the cheapest way to get into real fantasy sports. So that's one interpretation.
Very good point.
The other interpretation is, you know, you look at what happened again in Phoenix just the last couple of weeks where the option they have to move that team has become very valuable. Mm-hmm. And so much valuable that you've got a guy who's paid $170 million for half of a team that loses a ton of money. And I just kind of wonder if some of these guys are playing an angle where you got to get into the league, and then once you're into the league, if you can find a way to get to Seattle or find a way to get to Las Vegas or find a way to get to wherever, all of a sudden that investment looks a little smarter.
And it's funny you say that, because if Jim Belcilli had played that game that way,
yes,
he would own a team, and there might be one in Hamilton.
Yep.
Or Southern Ontario. But he didn't want to play that game. Right. And there are, you know, you have to go in, you have to kiss the ring.
I mean,
you have to play it the way the board wants it, and then you're okay.
I don't know that much about the ownership in Florida other than they do come from the Wall Street finance type background. But that the crew in Arizona, as soon as you saw that 5 year out, that's like a golden parachute for them.
Bigger number than that. There's another number too. It's the losing $50 million. $50 million.
And they're already halfway there.
Right.
They actually lost 21.
According to the New York Post, like they're right halfway there.
I haven't gone kind of combed through the numbers, but based on what they paid, based on what they've lost, and based on what they just got for selling half the team, it looks like they might get out of it.
Just don't forget that they have an ironclad lease till 2028 unless the city decides that they want to get out of it. And the other thing about the NHL, and Bettman's proved this, if the owner wants to stay, Bettman will fight to the end to keep that team where it is.
We got another full hour to come. The Raptors off to a pretty good start in their preseason. Preseason doesn't mean anything. But then again, this is a better Raptors team. And maybe it does start to mean something. The Kansas City Royals, a team of destiny, or a team of pure luck, or a really, really good team that just had a mediocre regular season and are now showing their real stripes. We'll try and figure out which in the next hour.